You're listening to Eye on the Community. I'm Vicky Pepper. Other than COVID, climate change may be one of the most dire and immediate topics Joe Biden will have to attack from day one of taking office. Here to discuss with me why that is founder and president of the nonprofit organization Forest Founders, Ford Seaman. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Vicky. This is very exciting. I love having a soapbox and platform to talk about my favorite topic here.
First, tell us about Forest Founders. What does it do?
We're actually going through a little bit of a pivot right now. We started out pretty much exclusively as a subscription platform to allow people to subscribe for either $10 or $20 package, which could negate either a single person's carbon footprint by planting trees on their behalf, or the $20 package, which is more suitable for a small family. I've realized that, you know, as an individual, it's very difficult, you know, outside of taking shorter showers, recycling, maybe trying to bike to work if you're in an area, a metro area that can support it. It's hard to know how you can actually reduce one's carbon footprint. So we tried to create something that was fun and creative and make it, you know, easy to become carbon accountable.
So in terms of climate change, what does Biden need to do differently than President Obama?
That's almost like a curveball. I expected you to ask what he needed to do differently from Trump. And on that one, I have a lot to talk about. Obama and his administration, they knew that there was an issue, and they knew they wanted to tackle it. They put forward a lot of different policies, but it seems to me like we still have a large portion of the American population that doesn't believe climate change is real. They think it's a hoax. I mean, we're not going to convert everybody. Obviously, there's still people out there that believe that the Earth is flat. So I don't think we're going to get across to 100% of the public. But we need to have a public education policy that really dives into the science so that it's irrefutable. I'm a big fan of Andrew Yang. I love how, you know, he simplifies the data, so it's very hard to argue with him. He said something in his town hall on climate change that kind of struck me. I was actually quite upset about it. He'd said that there isn't really much that the average American citizen can do. And I wholeheartedly disagree. I think that it starts with the citizen who's going to elect the right politicians, the politicians who believe in science. There are senators out there who still don't believe in evolution and who don't believe that dinosaurs ever existed, and it's an elaborate hoax. We need to kind of move away from the kind of partisan politics that can put these people in power.
And what do you think he needs to do differently than President Trump?
Well, I don't want to speak poorly about our publicly elected officials. There were a couple policies that Trump put in place for climate change and for the environment that were positive. It wasn't just his blatant disregard for the EPA and pretty much dismantling it and using it for crony capitalism to reward his supporters. He also put policies in place. He implemented tree planting programs. But I also feel like even though Forest Founders is at heart a tree planting program, it's a drop in the bucket. Last year, a YouTuber by the name of Mr. Beast planted 20 million trees. Elon Musk, the founder of Tesla and SpaceX, actually donated $1 million to the cause to plant 1 million trees with them. But one of the statistics that I'd seen was that we would have to plant 4 times as many trees every single day just to negate the carbon footprint of the U.S. alone. So planting a couple million trees through the Trump administration, it's a distraction tactic. It's to say, look what I'm doing. I'm doing something while behind the scenes he's changing all of the emission rulings that Obama put in place. I think what Biden needs to do is come at it with a much more systematic approach. I think he already came out and stated that one of the first things he'll do in office is to rejoin the Paris Climate Accord, which is incredibly important, but I still don't think it's doing enough. We have an incredible framework that's been presented and put forward to tackle not only the environmental issues, but also to help with our infrastructure, green energy, the Green New Deal by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I think we really need to support that, jump behind that as much as possible.
So what is the future of the Green New Deal?
I guess how I'd want to start kind of answering that is going back to how you kind of opened this segment. You talked about we have 2 major world battles that are happening as we speak, the coronavirus crisis and global warming. So the Green New Deal addresses both of them. We need economic stimulus in this country, but we also need to keep an eye on the future and global warming. So the Green New Deal is created to address both. It's an incredibly straightforward document, and I'd encourage all of the listeners here to go out and read it. Can I go over some of the main points?
Sure.
The Green New Deal starts by saying that human activity is the dominant cause of observed climate change over the past century. I'm literally reading from the document here. A changing climate is causing sea levels to rise and an increase in wildfires, severe storms, droughts, and other extreme weather events that threaten human life, healthy communities, and critical infrastructure. We can't argue with that. We're living the experience as we speak. Wildfires across the world are worse than ever before. And the last hurricane season we just had broke all previous records in terms of the sheer amount of storms. You know, I'm sure you and your listeners in the LA area, I'm sure you're no strangers to the fact that forest fires are becoming more problematic and more destructive.
Absolutely.
The Green New Deal, it continues, saying global warming at or above 2 degrees Celsius beyond the pre-industrial levels will cause mass migration, loss of annual economic output, larger wildfires, a loss of more than 99% of all coral reefs on Earth, and the list goes on. I'm not going to read verbatim everything in there. It's all depressing stuff. It, you know, all stuff that we need to address. It further explains that global temperatures must be kept in check. And in order to accomplish this, we must cut our greenhouse emissions 40 to 60% from 2010 levels by 2030. And we're already far exceeding the 2010 levels now. So we have a lot of work ahead of us. As I said, rejoining the Paris Climate Accord, I think, is a huge step in the right direction. And there are even a few countries that are ahead of their climate goals, as, according to the Paris Climate Accord. But it needs to be a worldwide push. You know, we all have to buy into this together for it to be able to work. So the Green New Deal goes on to explain how the U.S. has been responsible for the vast majority of the damage already caused. And as such, it's our moral imperative to lead the charge in finding a solution. It also gets into the vast wealth inequalities facing American workers, as well as the need for economic stimulus to repair our aging infrastructure. So it proposes that through a stimulus package targeting green energy and infrastructure, we can achieve net zero gas emissions, create millions of high-wage jobs, invest in the infrastructure of our country and the industry, help secure clean air, water, access to healthy food, access to nature, sustainable environment. It also outlines how it intends to do this in a way that I think is conducive to helping build up a strong middle class through equal opportunity programs. You know, I think the document is incredibly well crafted. The people in opposition to it, they state that it's absurdly expensive to implement all of this, and they throw out top line estimates that it could cost above $90 trillion. But what they failed to take into account is that the economic havoc that will happen if we don't address these issues could be factors larger. There are plenty of ways to raise the money through the private sector. Tens of trillions of dollars have been raised from the private sector to build our great nation through municipal bonds. There are numbers that are thrown out by the opposition to the Green New Deal that it would cost the average American family $600,000 in order to push the package through. But that's such a misleading statement, because nobody's saying, okay, every American family one-time chip in $600,000 to avoid disaster. It's just, that's a number that's used as a scare tactic to show people why it can't work, but it's skewing the data. It's putting a negative spin on it. There are tons of programs out there that are already well-funded for job equality, raising the minimum wage, and creating the kind of jobs that this deal would essentially do. We're in a very dangerous place. Our national debt has never been as high. We have all-time record low tax brackets. You know, in the golden ages of the United States, when we saw the most growth, there were tax brackets as high as 80, 90%. Now, I'm not saying we should go back there. I'm not trying to touch any of those highly partisan issues that we need. Oh, yeah, tax the rich, don't tax the poor, whatever it is. I just think that we need to come at this from a standpoint of knowing and understanding the data.
So in regards to the first 100 days of Biden's presidency, why are they so critical?
I think every day that there's a progressive president in is critical. And I think that depending on what side of the aisle you're on, it's always critical to get a jump start on your agenda. I think that there's been so much discord caused by the last administration. People just want to see the boat righted. I don't think it's about left policies, right policies. I think it's about bringing the people together. And from what I've seen from all the rhetoric that Biden has up on Twitter, he has an understanding of that. We need to come together as a country. We need to have an understanding of the actual data and not this partisan spin where two people of the same education level, depending on if their main news station is Fox or CNN, can look at the data and see it in two totally different ways. We need to better educate the people to give them the raw data to allow people to come to their own conclusions rather than having this automatic spin applied to everything. One factor I would love to talk about is our broken subsidy system. You know, it's something that I've done a lot of interviews, I've written articles on. Our federal subsidy system, it's completely broken. We claim to believe in the concept of free markets, yet the government, not so secretly, plays favorites. They reward the same large industries that are slowly killing us with harmful environmental tactics. We need to stop subsidizing factory farming. We need to stop subsidizing the fossil fuel industry. Those subsidies could be much better spent helping us invest in new green technologies and moving the ball forward. Right now, we're kind of at this turning point. With the price of renewable energy becoming cheaper than fossil fuels, we're seeing an influx of public and private companies pouring money into renewable energy projects. So recently, BlackRock, the world's largest asset manager, just pledged to divest from fossil fuel projects and investments. We're going in the right direction, but we can't let up the pressure. It's an all or nothing, you know, zero-sum game that we can't afford to lose. BlackRock coming out and saying that they were going to divest from fossil fuels, it was lauded in the renewable energy world as like this big win. For me, I didn't see it that way. I think that if BlackRock took this stance 10 years ago when the price of fossil fuels were cheaper than renewables, that would have been making a stand. That would have been saying we need to do the right thing. But now at this point, you know, if renewable energy is cheaper than fossil fuels, it's the smart business decision to make. So while I think it's great that we're moving in that direction, the government really needs to step in and do more. We have some great programs. There are major tax rebates for homeowners who want to get Energy Star appliances that use less energy. If they want to put solar on their house, they can take tax write-offs on that. If they want to do geothermal heating and cooling systems that use the radiant temperature of the earth to pre-treat the air that then goes into the AC or heating system so it doesn't have to come up from outside temperatures, these are all big steps in the right direction. But we need more, and we need more education, and we need more people telling the masses what's available. One thing that we're doing with Forest Founders is we're pivoting from the subscription model. We'll still be offering that, but now we're really going towards an educational model. For me, advocacy is so important. There are some amazing advocates for the environment. You have Leonardo DiCaprio, who does amazing work and is always bringing light to all of these issues. Greta Thunberg is an inspiration, very polarizing figure. You either love her or you hate her, it seems. But what gets me is I don't understand how somebody can harbor hate for I guess she's not so much a child anymore. She's, you know, almost a young adult. But I don't understand how grown men and women could have a hatred for somebody like that when all they're trying to do are highlight the issues that are going to impact us all. It really shows this deep division that we have in our culture. I think it's antithetical to us moving forward and actually being able to address these issues.
I've been speaking with Ford Seaman, founder and president of the nonprofit Forest Founders. Fred, how can we get more information or how can we contact you?
Check out the website, forestfounders.org. My email address is ford@forestfounders.org. We're putting a lot of resources towards our educational assets. One thing that we're doing is building up earth sciences curriculum that teachers can use as a baseline to help teach about the warming planet and what we can do. What we really want to do is we want to get out there and inspire people to let them know that as individuals, there's always something that you can do, whether it's making sure that you're voting for the candidate who believes in climate change, voting for the candidate who pledges that they're not going to be run by a corporate lobbyist agenda. There's just so much that we can do as individuals that we just don't have an understanding of, and that's what we need. We need education. We have to understand what we can do to make a difference. The FDA, I don't think that they've actually updated the food pyramid in 50 years. Our buying practices in general have all been dictated by what will help drive the capitalistic machine. We've had outdated practices in place since the 50s designed to help big businesses at the expense of the population. We have planned obsolescence. We have factory farming now that's incredibly destructive to the environment that are heavily subsidized to the point where mom and pop and subsistence farmers can no longer make it in America. And they're all being bought up by these larger corporations. And then the only reason that they're able to be profitable is because of the subsidies from the U.S. It's completely backwards, and we're really painting ourselves into a corner here. You know, if we stop tilling the soil and let biocultures accumulate, we can use less pesticides and fertilizers. It'll dramatically cut back on emissions in the farming industry. It's these kind of creative solutions that we really need to educate people about and get people worked up over. We need an educated consumer base, an educated population, and that's where all the decisions start, because we're the ones who put the people in power who make the decisions that are going to impact us well into the future. You know, it's hard to have a Congress and a Senate. I think right now the average age is higher than it's ever been. We need young, informed people to be making our decisions. That's one of the reasons I have such an appreciation for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I know a lot of people, you know, she's a firebrand. You either love her or you hate her as well. But at the end of the day, if you stop looking at the person who brings the solution forward and you focus on the data points and you focus on the actual solutions, it's hard to disagree with them. Once again, I want to urge everybody listening, read the Green New Deal. Go online, Google it. Condensed, it's a 4 or 5 page document. The way that they have it that they gave to Congress, where it has all the fancy words like whereas and the legalese, it's 14 pages, but it's incredibly accessible. Read it. I think a lot of people will be surprised at just how elegant of a solution it could be. It's not about the messenger. It's about the message. The Green New Deal can be the de facto solution. We had the New Deal with FDR that helped bring us out of the Depression. My grandfather is part of the TVA, the Tennessee Valley Authority. They built dams, other infrastructural projects. That's what we need in this day and age. Donald Trump whipped up everybody with the rhetoric of immigrants are coming to take your jobs. Well, jobs are going away whether immigrants come in or not. Like Andrew Yang, part of his whole platform was that we're going to automate away millions of jobs in the next couple of years. And these are jobs that aren't going to come back. So we need to think about now for the future, how are we going to create the jobs and where are we going to create the jobs that are going to have the largest impact for us? When this virus first came on the scene, there were trillions of dollars, you know, $1 trillion a month for months on end that was going into supporting our economy, shoring up stock prices and making sure that the Dow didn't crash. That was a one-time stimulus that came and went. And now we're in an inflated economy where it's, you know, we're in more danger of a market crash now, in my opinion, than ever before. And I am a little qualified for that. I was a broker on Wall Street for a little while. But we're at this point where we need to make sure that every single dollar that we're spending is being well spent, that there's going to be a positive impact. I think, you know, if we can train millions upon millions of people and give them living wage jobs as well as benefits, the Green New Deal can help us rebuild the middle class.
Any last thoughts?
You know, for me, the reason I'm so passionate is because I have a daughter. I want my daughter to feel comfortable having kids. I want grandkids. I want to think about our life and our experiences on this planet moving forward. There was a big movement of celebrities recently who came out and said that it was irresponsible for people to have children. That to me is disgusting. And we all need to come together to really figure out how we're going to move forward as a species, as a world. We have to represent the animals that we're driving to extinction. A recent article in the New York Times, it was published back on the 18th of November. The headline was Massive Volcanic Eruptions Ignited Oil and Coal Deposits in Siberia and the Events That Led to the Permian Triassic Great Dying Event. Think about that. Natural causes caused these fossil fuel deposits to burn, and that's what created what they called the Great Dying. We're doing it to ourselves. They're not catching on fire naturally. The peat bogs in Siberia might be, but we're pumping billions of barrels of oil out of the ground on an annual basis to feed our need for growth, for our creature comforts. We're plundering and pillaging the planet for short-term gains using resources that took millions of years to create. The conditions to create coal do not exist on this planet anymore. we are not creating any new coal, even if we stopped using the coal that we have. The fact that we're using these finite resources that we call resources, really, it's the world's way of balancing the carbon. We're messing with the natural order in a way that we pretend we don't understand, but scientists from Exxon knew about this back in the 50s and 60s. And they said, you know what? Not our problem. Kick the can down the road. It's all about the almighty dollar. We really need to overhaul the system. We need to think a lot more about the future. We have to consider life cycle costs. People want to pay less now, but more over time. We need to pay more now to fix the problem, to not have to pay more over time. That's really what needs to happen, Vicky.
And what's next for Forest Founders?
So one of the things we're doing with Forest Founders currently is we're creating, I guess, what you would call kind of like a curated link farm, where we're collecting all of these incredible resources that help educate people on best practices for recycling, what government websites to go to find out what subsidies exist for homeowners. And we're just basically taking all of these different incredible resources and putting them all in one place that's easy to find, very accessible. As I said, it's highly curated, so you know exactly what you're going to get when you click into a different site. And I think it's so important now, more than ever before, just because, as I've been harping on this entire interview, education is such a key to tackling this crisis. With the coronavirus, with global warming, people want to look at them as two different entities, but it doesn't have to be. You know, I think two birds, one stone, let's get the Green New Deal going. Let's throw the entirety of our support behind it.
I've been speaking with Ford Seaman, founder and president of the nonprofit Forest Founders. Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. Thank you for having me on.